Welcome back to the Mindful Sport Performance Podcast. I'm Dr. Keith Kaufman.
I'm Dr. Tim Pineau.
And I'm Taylor Brown.
And we were thinking our last couple of seasons, we've had a couple of episodes on grief and loss. And we were thinking we wanted to circle back to that this season as well. And I guess for our longtime listeners, provide an update on what's been going on and just sort of touch back on this topic, which we feel is pretty significant and I guess on the surface, maybe not all about sport performance, but certainly relevant to the work that we do. And you know, we at least have gotten a lot of value out of having these conversations amongst ourselves as well as with Jon Kabat-Zinn in previous seasons. And so we hope that in revisiting this topic today, this is something that you, our listeners, will also see some value in. So Tim, I know you've kind of been the star of this particular topic and have kind of bared your soul here in previous iterations of this conversation. And for listeners who aren't aware, Tim recently had another child, which is obviously a very, very big deal. And so I have barely had any opportunity to talk to him. He's been on paternity leave. I'm just as eager as anyone who might be listening to this to find out how he's doing and kind of how he's integrating this new reality into everything that he's been through in the last couple of years. So Tim, how are you?
Yeah, I'm okay. Like, which actually, I'm not just a throwaway. Like, yeah, well, I'm okay. Like, it was really important to me to like follow up on this and like have another episode this season where we get a chance to talk about this. In part, I think because it has felt helpful, it's felt good to me to be able to talk about it. And I think my hope was that just being able to share about my experience would be helpful to other people. But I think each time, I didn't really necessarily know what exactly I wanted to share or what the ultimate, like how it was going to get wrapped up in some package, what sort of lesson or message would be there. It's just like, I just got to share this. I feel like I felt similarly coming into today. I was like, I don't really know exactly what I want to say or what the point is. But then Keith, as you were talking, like a light bulb just kind of like went off in my mind when you were just saying like, oh yeah, we've kind of revisited this a couple of times. And I realized like, oh yeah, I think really what I want to share today is that I'm okay. Like grief isn't just a moment in time. It is this process that like unfolds in really unpredictable ways. And if we had just stopped at that episode, and I guess for people that don't know, so yeah, my daughter Anaya died in February of 2022. And pretty just a couple months after that, I think we did an episode where I talked about it. And then last year we had Jon Kabat-Zinn on. We were just like, I kind of updated a little bit about what my experience had been just, you know, over this, that next, I guess, year or so, and talked more about like mindfulness and grief. And yeah, and here I am. I mean, so we're recording today. This is December, 2023, towards the end of December. Yeah. My daughter, Nayanthara, was born on November 9th. So, she's just 6 weeks old just yesterday. And yeah, I kind of can't believe I'm here. I think if we had just recorded that one episode right after Anaya died, I hope it still would have been helpful. I think it still would have been helpful to me to have done it, but it would have been so incomplete. I mean, just such a sliver of the overall story of what this loss has been like for me and my family, and how it led us here in ways I never could have predicted. Because I mean, it's still, you know, we have a 6 week old, like there are still, you know, like she was, oh, last night was a rough night. She was up so much, cluster feeding, to like sleep deprived. And, you know, it's all that, that's just, you know, that's how they torture people, you know? So like there's parts of it that aren't great, but you know, in this other really important way, it feels so much easier. It's the best word I have for it. It's like easier than it was with my son. He's five and a half now. And in those first few months, you know, Anaya got sick when she was about 3 months old. So for his first few months, you know, it was like, to the best of my knowledge, everything was normal. It feels easier than that. I just, I don't know. I think part of it is the perspective. Like, for me anyway, the experience of losing a child has, like, I think it, like, pushed me to take, like, huge steps back to, like, look at the big picture of life. And I think since then, I've really intentionally continued to try to just take further and further steps back. It's been like a really important part of how I've been practicing mindfulness, actually. And it just, I don't know. It makes things easier. It's like not without anxiety. Don't get me wrong. You know, things started with Anaya. She had problems eating. Again, she was growing fine, like eating fine for the first 3 months. And then she just like stopped. Or like she really reduced what she was eating, and she really having some trouble with feeding. And doctors thought like, oh, this is probably like an allergy. And so we went through the whole deal of like, oh, does she have like a milk allergy or something that Nithya is eating? She was breastfeeding, you know. So it's like, so that Nithya had to like change her diet, and we had to try all these special formulas. The doctors were like, oh, we'll just wait; it'll work itself out, you know. But eventually, you know, after a couple weeks. You know, we took her to a pediatric GI to like look a little bit deeper into like what's really going on. And she was really dehydrated at that appointment. And so they're like, this was at Children's Hospital. So like, well, why don't you just take her to the ER and they can like rehydrate her. They'll put a little IV in and then we can run some tests and figure some stuff out. But at the ER, they discovered that there was something wrong with her heart. And that's where kind of everything went off the rails. And, you know, and 3 weeks later, she was gone. But it started with the problems eating, you know. And so there are still, like, I do the middle of the night bottle with my daughter now. And there are nights where she'll only take an ounce, you know. And I'm like, oh God. Like, this is how it started, you know. But they did a bunch of extra tests, you know, while she was in utero, and she's been to Children's. She had a whole cardiology workup, like like her heart is fine, you know. So part of me knows, like, no, this is just the normal ups and downs, you know. So like that anxiety is still there. But I mean, those moments are kind of fleeting. For the most part, it's a lot of gratitude. And just, gratitude for her, that she's here, that she's healthy. Just a gratitude that life has all unfolded in this way. Like, I stepped far back and realized, like, I was just so unbelievably lucky, even having had this kind of really terrible experience. It's like, I still feel so unbelievably lucky to be living this life.
There's a lot to react to there. I think a lot of different pieces, and I'm honestly trying to decide what I want to ask you about first. I guess the first thing that I wanted to invite you to share a little bit more about in what you're saying. You mentioned the idea of stepping back, and you said that that's been a big way that you've dealt with all of this, and you continue to deal with it in this way, and you linked it directly to your mindfulness practice. And Maybe you could explain a little more, like what that is. What does that look like when you say stepping back?
Last fall, I had this meeting with one of the teams I work with, and I was trying to kind of convey this idea, and I was kind of inviting them to think, you know, like imagine the Aztec Empire, you know, in Mesoamerica, or imagine the Roman Empire, you know, or imagine one of these, you know, some, yeah, an empire in East Asia or in India, at the height of their power, you know, like the people who lived there, particularly the people who were in charge, right? The emperors, the kings, the whoever, they thought, you know, we are the pinnacle. We are the best there's ever been, the best there's ever going to be. This is going to last forever. And now they're dust, you know, they're in the history books. It's like that, just this nothing lasts, you know. To think that some singular event in my life is important on some grand scale is ludicrous, you know. And I don't say that to like minimize my experience. It's I think it reminds me of that quote of I'm gonna butcher it, but I'll paraphrase it, you know, that like what is it, like wisdom tells me that I'm nothing, but love tells me that I'm everything. And it's like I still have big feelings, you know, I still have big experiences, but I also at the same time can like kind of hold the paradox of like, it is absurd that I'm even conscious right now, that like stretching back to the Big Bang, that like molecules banging together somehow created life, you know, and that like I'm here and aware of being here. Like that shouldn't be, like that is against all odds. And then to layer on top of that, like I was born in the United States, I was born a white man. I my parents worked really hard to provide me a good life. I met like this just wonderful person, my wife, who's like makes my life so much better. Like I just like have so much, I've been given so much, like to let my life be defined by, albeit a very terrible thing, like it's just, in a sense, it's a ludicrous way to look at your life. You know, so I really push myself to think about like big picture, you know, like who was standing on this spot where I'm standing right now, 400 years ago, 1,000 years ago? What was happening? You know, what will be happening in this spot that I'm on right now in 1,000 years, in 5,000 years? I mean, at some point, the Earth won't even exist anymore, right? The moon is going to careen into our planet. Or I can't remember what's going to happen first, whether the moon careens into our planet or whether the sun explodes. But like one of those things is going to happen eventually, you know? And it's like, I don't know. I have found it very, very helpful to, I don't know, just like kind of do this playful, these like kind of thought experiments. It's like, yeah, time is so much bigger than we can possibly comprehend. The universe is so much bigger than we could possibly comprehend. To let something that happens, for me to let something that happens in my life kind of cloud my vision is just so... Yeah, I don't know. And maybe part of it is like I'm someone, I mean, right, like I really like school and I like science and I like learning, I like knowledge. And like part of that comes with this idea of like looking for capital T truth. You know, if I'm committed to capital T truth and making too big a deal out of anything that happens in my life, it's just not the truth. It's just not it's just not reality. I could let it be and somehow ruin, I don't know, all of these amazing things that I have access to, that I've been given, like so much more than like a lot of other people in the world. I don't know. It's like I would much rather choose to look at it from this other way that I found, that I think it brings me a lot of peace.
Thanks for sharing all that, Tim. I have some follow-up thoughts to that. I guess my initial thought is, how does that impact the work you do with athletes? Or has it? This zooming out, has that come into your work? And, we've had a lot of conversations this season about, we've had some conversation about competition and mindfulness. We've had at least one conversation about, why does winning matter? Just hearing you talk like that, zooming out to those perspectives, winning does not matter in those perspectives. It completely doesn't. So, but in the work you do, obviously, you're working with athletes who care immensely about winning. And so how do you bridge those two perspectives when you're doing your work? I guess I put a few questions in there. Sorry.
No. I think it's it feels like an important question. It's been part of this experience for me, right? Like, cause I think losing Anaya and really being like forced in a way to like have some of these incredibly intense experiences, that it's an experience I never would have chosen to have. It was just like really showed me something. And I think part of the evolution, like I was talking about at the beginning, of like, what has come from it or how has it all unfolded? Like has been like, oh, it's really impacted the way that I experience mindfulness and of course then the way that I teach mindfulness, which is still incredibly important to me. And it comes in very concretely. Like I was just saying, like the example I was giving, like I said a lot of what I just said to this group of athletes. I was trying to, as we were thinking about this upcoming season and the year and like, what are, and like coming back to this theme of choices, which comes up a lot in MSPE, like I really want to help them understand the choices that they're making. And one of the choices is, not just in the concrete way, but what do I choose to pay attention to? Like in this very moment, am I like keeping my eye on the ball? But like, what do you give airtime to in your life? Like, what are you calling a big deal? What are you experiencing as dramatic or as a tragedy or whatever. And not to say that it's not to say that those emotions aren't real, but it's like, it's both perspectives, right? I can't emphasize that enough. It is not about minimizing our subjective human experience. I think mindfulness contains all these paradoxes, and this is one of them, right? Like, because I certainly wouldn't want anyone to do it to me, to minimize my grief. And I don't want the message to come across that I'm doing that to anyone else who has suffered any sort of loss. And it is also true that right alongside that, there's this other perspective that I'm talking about. And so I invited in, right? I told imagine, think about the Roman Empire. Think about an emperor sitting in his box in the Colosseum, and like literally like putting his thumb up or thumb down to like say, yep, that person's going to live, that person's going to die, right? They think they have this absolute power. The pharaohs in Egypt, like, believed they were divine. And they're gone. They're nothing, Like, they're mummies now in museums that we look at and think like, oh, and so then we go and have this experience where we're the center of the universe. Like, oh, I am now looking at this mummy, just think about that. Step outside of yourself for a moment. Right. So that when you come off the field after a great game, after a terrible game, whatever it is, like have your feelings, right? And then remember, oh, I'm making choices. I'm making choices about the role I want these feelings to play in my life. Right. Like I'm making choices about the stuff I feed and give airtime to. And do I want to stay this upset? Do I want to nurse this grievance? Because that's how these, in all mindfulness teaching, right, talk about the transience of our experience, our thoughts and our emotions. No feeling lasts forever, but we can certainly stay angry, as an example, for a really long time if we choose to. We keep reminding ourselves of that thing that made us angry and keep believing the story about this separate I that was hurt by this separate you. And it's like, okay, I had that experience, but am I going to choose to feed that fire, or am I going to embrace something else? And so I think in a way, getting back to your question, like, how does this impact how I work with athletes? Like, I don't think a lot, and I think my teaching has shifted too. Like, I don't teach a lot about like direct application to sport performance. It's much more about well-being. Like, it's much more about like trying to offer this perspective. And like, how do you keep your life in balance? Because I think for a long time, I tried to like kind of sit on that fence that you were talking about of like, well, winning can matter, but it also kind of doesn't matter. And like, now I'm just like full on the other side of the fence. Like, winning doesn't matter. Like, there is a perspective in which winning just doesn't matter, right? There is a perspective in which it does. And again, you can hold both, paradox, right? But I try to give a lot of airtime to like let's entertain the idea that winning doesn't matter. And if winning didn't matter, like, then what are the reasons we're here? Because you love your teammates, because you love the sport, because you love the way it helps your body function, or all these different things. Like there are so many reasons. So many things. Like I was saying about my life, right? There's so many things to be grateful for. And I could be stuck on the fact that I lost a child. You know, I can let that take over everything. In the same way that an athlete can let winning and losing take over everything. Like, there are so many different pieces to look at. I'm like, why? If we have the choice, why would we choose to look at it in this reductive, myopic way, you know?
I'm going to try to fumble my way through this because I think it's so interesting what you're saying. It definitely reminds me a lot of what you talked about with John last season, Tim. Albeit in a very dense, very philosophical way. I remember feeling like I needed to recover for a few days after that one just to absorb the high level information that was being conveyed in that episode. And I mean, what I hear you saying in a way, and I don't mean to be glib in framing it this way, but it's like size doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Right? Like what we're sort of saying, right? In a very practical in one sense, but also very philosophical in another sense way, is that whether they're big feelings or small feelings, whether it's the death of a child or the loss of a game or the missing of a shot, whatever it is that we're reacting to, it kind of has the same underlying mechanism. And in a sense, it matters very much. It matters very much because it's your reaction. It's your feelings to whatever is happening to you in your life. And so for that reason, it has value. Right? It matters. However, just like you're saying about the Aztecs, just like you're saying about all the ways that we see ourselves as the center of the universe, the reality is this is going to come and go just like anything else. And it's really hard to have that perspective when you're in it, right? When you're standing there having just missed a shot, or when your daughter has just passed away, it's extremely hard to separate yourself from this reality that can feel all consuming. And I guess going all the way back to the question that I asked you, right? Like, stepping back, I mean, yes, we could go into the cosmos. And yes, I like doing that with you. I always learn so much from you when we go into these sort of very deep philosophical places. And yet there's something so simple and so practical about what you're saying as well, is that it's not whether winning means something or not. It's that if you allow yourself to get attached to it, just like allow yourself to get attached to anything, it takes away from your experience.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's going to, you know, winning matters in that moment, and then that moment is over and it's dead and you're on to the next thing. And as human beings, what we're always wanting to do is hold on.
Yeah.
Right? Hold on in some way, shape, or form to what's pleasurable, reject what is not pleasurable so we can find what's pleasurable again. And I think, and I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but is this, like I said, I'm sort of fumbling my way through this. Like, isn't that kind of what you're saying, is that whether we're talking about a win or a loss, or we're talking about the death of a child, even though ostensibly these are two very different experiences, from a mindfulness perspective, we're saying feelings are feelings, reactions are actions. They're going to come, they're going to go, they're going to evolve. And it's all about just allowing that process to unfold.
Yes. 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 And I have a couple threads to pull together that I think that what you're saying is reminding me of. Like, one, just this experience comes to mind. I'm in this supervision group. bunch of other therapists, and there's a senior therapist, you know, we meet once a week. And and at one point, the senior therapist, he had shared with us that he and his wife got a puppy. And it had been, you know, months and months. That was before, right around the time Anaya was born, maybe before she was born, I'm not sure. But then, of course, like many months pass, and, you know, Anaya has died by this point, and I'm back to work, and I'm back in the supervision group, and he hadn't mentioned the puppy in a long time. And someone asked him, like, oh, you know, hey, you haven't mentioned your puppy. How's that going? You know? And he was like, oh, like, I appreciate you asking, but it's, you know, it's quite sad for us. We actually, like, we had to rehome her. Like, it just, you know, we feel kind of really terrible about it. And we were so excited to have her. And we, like, tried a lot of different things, but it just ended up really not being a good fit. And so we, you know, ultimately what we had to do was, you know, rehome her. And in that moment, I had this really intense feeling of being kind of like left alone by him, that like, oh my God, like you knew part of what I was going through and you didn't share, you know, you didn't join me. And I said that I shared this reaction, you know, and he was like a bit taken aback, you know, just in the sense of like, and he said, I would never in a million years, never would have crossed my mind to somehow equate our experiences, or to say, because I had to rehome a puppy, that I might know something about what you're going through and losing a child, which, as a therapist, I would never say that to a client. If that were, the roles were reversed, I don't think I would ever have the gall to say that to a client, right? But there was something about, I think, seeing the size doesn't matter piece that in the aftermath of losing Anaya made me feel so much more connected to other people. So much more, maybe like empathic or compassionate, or just that, like, oh wow, like, you know, no matter the quote unquote size, you know, like suffering is suffering. And it's this universal thing that connects all of us. And we don't have to judge each other's, mine's bigger than yours or smaller than yours or worse than yours, or, you know, if we can let that ego piece go, like, there's a lot of connection to be had. And yet at the exact same time, rehoming a dog is different than losing a child, right? Like the subjective experience, of course, is different in some way. So it's like, it's both, right? It's meaningfully different, and this potential point of connection, you know, but I think to stay so deeply connected to that reality can be overwhelming, or at least I think for me, it was. Because in the months leading up to Nayanthara's birth, something in me started to kind of close off to that. Like after Anaya died, I never cried so much, and like tears just came so easily. You know, more days than not, something was making me cry. And I think, and not necessarily in a bad way, honestly, it felt good for the most part to be like that connected to my emotional experience. And to, honestly, when I was feeling the grief like that, it made me feel closer, more connected to Anaya. So I kind of welcomed it, you know. And then there was this point where I realized, like, wow, it's been a week or two, I haven't cried. And then a week or two turned into a month, turned into a couple months. I started talking about it with my therapist. I was like, I'm not crying. Like, what's wrong? Nothing's wrong. I went, you know. Because I'd gotten really attached to this belief of, like, that's what my grief looks like. That's what it feels like. That's what I should be like. And I felt the ripple effects too. Like, I felt like a bit less connected to, like, to my clients and to other people. And I felt like I'd lost something somehow in, like, this, whatever it was, that connection to that emotion. And even in the weeks after Nayanthara was born, still, I just, like, couldn't cry. And I kind of realized that I was kind of really attached to this idea of like what my grief was supposed to look like, or this experience that it had kind of given me, this channel it had opened up in me. And I was like, oh, right, grief is not just a moment in time. Like, it's going to ebb and flow. My experience is going to ebb and flow. And maybe it opened this really like beautiful thing inside of me. And then like, and then it closed down for a little while, and maybe it'll open again, you know, but like, I really had to allow, like, I really had to get to a point of like letting go and being like, nope, this is just where it is now, where I am now. And sure enough, you know, it was when we took, she was about a month old, when we took Nayanthara to Children's Hospital to do her cardiology workup. You know, there's no indication that anything was wrong. They're like, given your family history, you know, with your other daughter, you know, it's probably a good idea to do this, to this workup. So they went and did this echocardiogram and everything. You know, the doctor came in afterwards and said, you know, like, every, you know, baby hearts are incredibly small. It's like, we cannot with 100% certainty, you know, say everything is fine. But like, we wouldn't be able to say that for any baby. But like, with 95% certainty, like, everything looks great. It looks exactly like it's supposed to. Like, there's no indication that anything is wrong. Like, you know, he said, like, if it weren't for your family history, if this were just a baby coming in, I would say, like, this baby is in perfect health. You do not need to come back. Like, you're good to go. Like, and he said it, like, and if you guys want to come back, we can do this again in a couple months just to be doubly sure. But like, I don't think you need to. That would really just be for your own peace of mind. It was really like the best possible outcome of this, you know, assessment. You know, so I was like, just like kind of sinking in, and the doctor left the room, and I just started crying. Like, all those tears just started coming again. It wasn't exactly the same as I remember it being, but it felt like, yeah, again, like something that kind of like cracked open. And it was just this other reminder of like, oh, right, this is going to keep changing. Like, this is going to keep evolving. I don't want to get stuck in any moment of it. I don't want to get stuck in like that depth of the sorrow and the pain right after it happened. I also don't want to get stuck in the sense of gratitude, even of like, oh, this is like teaching me so much. And this is like opening me up to connection with other people. Like, nothing is certain. Nothing lasts forever. Even that emotional openness, like, there is ebbs and flows within myself. I think that's been such a key piece. I mean, to take it out of the cosmos and into the more individual, like that's a really good, it's been a very helpful kind of expansive view too. Like, gosh, you know, over the course of not eons and, you know, millennia, but just like this history of my life, so much changes. I'm such a different person than I was 2 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago. And ludicrous to think that like any moment in my life right now is going to define the rest of my life. When I think back, you know, 15 years ago, like how different everything is in ways I could never have expected. And like, the same is probably going to be true 15 years from now.
Do you think it's possible, as you were just saying that last bit, I was thinking, in a way, what you're talking about is the underpinnings of resilience, which is very much a buzzword in sports psychology, right? And something that a lot of people throw around and a lot of people want. And it's, I think, akin now to mental toughness, right? When we put it into that domain. And I mean, again, I don't mean to be glib when I describe it this way, but it's like you're giving the least sexy definition of resilience you possibly can. But it's the reality, right? It's the truth, is that the key here is being able to allow your experience to unfold. And I think no matter how many different ways we dress it up, no matter how many different ways we might meditate or try to practice or try to work on this, it's so hard to get around this fundamental truth that so many of us just want our experience to be other than what it is. We want to feel differently than we do right now. And if you can just not force that process, right? If, you know, whether we're talking about some massive, massive big deal event in your life or something that's more of the mundane, it's all the same, that being able to recognize where you're at, allow it to be what it is. I mean, you're talking about this beautifully in the context of your grief, right? And just layers of the onion, how easy it is to get attached upon layers of attached upon layers of attached. And when you can, again, use your phrase, when you can step back from that a little bit, I mean, obviously, I think there's a lot of terms, there's a lot of concepts, psychological ideas that you're getting at in what you're describing, Tim, but I hear a lot of resilience in what you're saying. I don't think you'd ever describe it that way. I don't think you'd be like, oh, let's bottle this and turn this into like, listen to what I do. And, you know, this is the key to mental top. Like that's obviously not who you are, but you're obviously a very resilient man. And I think you're talking about how you're able to be resilient, even in the face of overwhelming suffering.
Yeah. But, you know, it makes me think of that, like, I think it's a very kind of like Buddhist concept of like that we want to call it resilience. I think in Buddhism, you call it freedom, liberation. You know, it's like, it's already there. It's already in us. If you look reality square in the face, you realize you have no other choice but to just be with the unfolding, right? Like everything else is kind of just an illusion. And so it's like, yeah, and I think you're right that I wouldn't be like, how do we bottle this up and teach it, you know? Because like, I think in some ways, I like just, you know, whatever, I've been meditating and kind of trying to figure out mindfulness or teach mindfulness or write about mindfulness now for, I don't know, 15, 20 years. Like, it feels like it's been a long time. And I see all like the striving that went into that. And it was like, now I'm at this point where I was like, oh no, it's not about striving and learning, but it was really about letting go, letting go, trying to make anything out of it and realizing like it was all right in front of me the whole time, which is frustratingly as a teacher, I think you can't actually teach anybody. It's like, that's the whole experiential piece. Like you have to come to it on your own. And I think that's the, you know, if you sit and watch your breath long enough, you know, it's not like I'm trying to attain perfect focus, or I'm trying to count my breaths all the way to 1,000, or I'm trying to, you know, whatever it is. It's like, oh, because that is just simply an experience that is ever changing and unfolding right in front of me, and is representative of literally everything I experience every moment. But like, it took the death of my daughter for that to like click for me, you know. Like I don't know how to necessarily teach that to someone, but I think my point is, like, I think psychology, Western psychology, has really tried to take like resilience as a thing you can build in someone, as a thing you can teach, you can package it, and you can sell it. I think it's like, no, it's like not a thing. I don't think it's a thing I built up. I don't think it is. I don't think it's some sort of natural trait that I had. Like, I think it is just a human thing that I discovered within myself because I just looked. I was willing to look really closely. I think some experiences kind of like forced some things to the surface. But like, yeah, you know, we're already free. We don't have to do anything to get there. We're already free. We just have to open our eyes to it.
I just wanted to relate this back to some of the work that I've done with athletes. I feel so silly saying that now following this conversation, but, just for the, you know, for the coach or athlete who's listening to this, I've often used what I think is often called the suffering formula. You might have written about it in your book, and you know what I'm talking about. The pain plus resistance equals suffering. Mm-hmm. And I've often introduced that to athletes as a way to say, you can take the resistance away from any experience, and then it's just an experience. And to demonstrate that, I say, you know, then, you know, the pain or fatigue or exhaustion that you're experiencing in whatever sport you're doing. I've worked a lot with track and field athletes, you know, say running the 800, you know, that experience is the same experience as sitting on a beach, feeling the sun on your face and feeling the breeze. They're both just experiences that humans have, and the difference is you just have a lot of resistance to one and a lot of acceptance of the other, and just kind of what Keith said earlier about we're always seeking pleasure and avoiding displeasure or discomfort in some way. And it sounds like to me that's kind of one of the big themes of this conversation. You know, you talk about it, Tim, as unfolding of experience. And I just started working with an athlete again who's I worked with a lot in the past, and she's on her way, you know, fingers crossed, as much as it matters, to the Olympics in Paris. And she you know, we hadn't worked together for a while. In the first Zoom call that we started talking again, she said, you know, I just really want to just be open to experience. And I was like, I have nothing to teach you. Like, what? Well, why am I here? Like, that is, I think, the mindset that, you know, when we do apply this to sports and we do try to teach it, that's kind of the mindset that we're going towards is being open to unfolding experience. And I think the yes and or the paradoxes that we talk about, you know, having that mindset, but then also wanting to work towards a goal and wanting to work towards achieving something, and maybe knowing this broader perspective of that you were talking about earlier, Tim, while also attribute, you know, ascribing meaning to things in your life, I think is the juxtaposition of what we're, yeah, what we're kind of talking about.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it reminded me of this really funny experience I had. This was a couple years ago. I went to go pick up my son from school, and like as I was parking, I like took a turn, I clipped a curb, and got a flat tire. And no, I mean, like, it's a frustrating experience, right? But I was like, oh, okay, like. You know, we had a little bit of time. It was probably like a half hour or so before we had to be anywhere, and like what had to be anywhere. Like that's we make that crap up. We have to be what we had to be home for dinner. Okay, fine. We'll be a little bit late for dinner. And like his school is literally like on the same block as a 24-hour tire repair shop. It was like how like this is I'm so lucky that I'm like this thing is right here. And so I pick my son up and I'm like, but we're going on an adventure, you know. We're gonna go and we're gonna get our tire fixed, you know, and like it's gonna be really cool. And he's like, oh, okay, cool. So we like go around the block and we go to the, you know, it's we're like in line. And there's this guy in front of me. The tire repair shop's the same deal, got a flat tire. And he's clearly so miserable. And we're chatting, you know. And I was like, oh yeah, we like clipped a curb and I'm not sure what happened. I think I can't quite see. Like, I don't know if it's gonna be a quick repair. You need a whole new tire. He's like, oh, the same thing happened to me. I clipped a curb. I don't, oh, you know, and I'm getting so frustrated, I have to buy a whole new tire. And I'm like, yeah, but you know, I mean, otherwise this just would have been a random Tuesday. You know, it's like a new experience. And he looked at me, he's like, I've had enough experience. Oh, like that's a particular mindset that you could carry around with you in life to make everything miserable, you know, like yeah, you really do have to just like let go, be curious about what's there. Would I have rather just been able to like go home and have dinner? Absolutely, you know, but like I would also rather not be miserable. And so if I could be in a position and not only feel the frustration or only feel the misery, only feel the resistance. And sometimes it's there, sometimes we're human, right? Like I was saying with, you know, with the baby, like there's this one night, oh my God, where, you know, of course she's up in the middle of the night, we're sleep deprived, you know, and like no one is at their best, you know, when you're sleep deprived. And like I'm up and I'm trying to like she's screaming and I'm like waiting for the bottle to warm up and I'm trying to change her diaper and I get the diaper off and she peas when the diaper's off. God damn it. You know? So I like, okay. So I get her and, you know, clean her up, put her in a new outfit. You know, by the time that's over, she's screaming the whole time. The bottle is warmed up. Okay. All right. But go upstairs. feeding her the bottle, you know, that kind of calms her down. Of course, she poops while she's drinking. I'm like, all right, that's cool, right? Like, so I'm gonna go change her. I take the diaper off. She poops as soon as the diaper is off, her poop all over everything. I'm like cleaning her up again. I'm changing her outfit again. She's screaming at the top of her, you know. And like I was so angry. Just like, ugh, like jumping out of my skin, angry, you know, like, and I don't think like angry at her, like, I'm like, this ridiculous, you know, yeah, but just like angry, like, I do not want this to be my reality right now. I just wanted you to like have a bottle and go back to sleep so I can go back to sleep. And so like my wife got up because of, you know, because of all the screaming. And I mean, I think in general, most of the time, I'm like a pretty even keeled person. And she's like, "Are you okay? You know?" And I was like, "Yes, please take. I can't. I'm done. I'm like so angry. I can't. I'm, you know," which is like really not atypical for me. But she was fine. She was like, "Okay, cool. Get rid of it. I got it. I got, you know, like, no worries. Go. You know, go to sleep." But it's like, of course, like I like even all this whatever this. High-minded stuff I'm talking about now, like I'm just a human being like everybody else. Like I absolutely have resistance. I absolutely get lost in those really big feelings in certain moments, you know. But like I was saying, how this feels easier in some ways than with Ishan or with Anaya. Like I think I've had like two of those moments with her in the last 6 weeks. You know, like they're still there. They're absolutely still there, but they come a lot less frequently. You know, it's just much easier to be like, well, I would much rather be cleaning up poop than Herbie did. You know, like I have that experience. And most of the time, I don't have to like have that conscious thought. It just like is in me. Like, of course I would rather be here now doing this, you know? And I think a lot about, you know, like, you know, cause I'm, you know, interacting a lot with my parents, you know, they're super excited to grandbaby and everything like that. And I think like, God, like one day if I'm lucky, I'll be their age and my kids will have kids and like this part of my life will be over and I won't be up in the middle of the night with a baby anymore and I'll miss it. Like I love this. I like love being a dad. I love having little kids and I hope I like having bigger kids too, but like, and like it, I remind myself all the time how fleeting like this part is. I look at pictures of Ishan when he was 2 or 3 and I'm like, God, you were so freaking cute. You know, he's still pretty cute now, but like, oh, you know, I'm like, and that's gone now. It's gone. It's gone forever. You know, I have videos and pictures and stuff like that, but I never get to experience him that way again. And so it's like, I think I've so consistently reminded myself of that. Like it makes it a lot easier to be more present, kind of allow for whatever's here to just be here.
Well, I'm mindful of the time. And so maybe to kind of bring the conversation in a little bit, I know you said, you know, used the adjective high-minded to describe how you're talking. It reminds me again of the conversation we had with John last year, Tim, where there is something high-minded about it. There's something aspirational. There's something very philosophical about it. But there's also something so basic about it. You know, I think that's, you know, our work is trying to thread a very delicate needle where we're trying to do justice to some very complicated and deep and profound principles, but to bring it into the dialogue in a way that is tangible and accessible for people. And sometimes it means leaning a little bit in one direction. Sometimes it means leaning a little bit in the other direction. And my hope is that anyone who listens to this, you know, yes, we talked about some pretty deep stuff, some pretty profound themes, but also can kind of pull out and look at their own lives and look at their own things that they get attached to, their own overwhelming emotional experiences, whether it's on the field or whether it's in their personal lives. And I hope, like you said earlier, Tim, that thinking this way provides a little bit more choice in terms of how to relate to these things. If we kind of start from the idea that size doesn't matter, right? So whether it's a big feeling or a small feeling, we can relate to these things all in the same way. Of course, understanding that all feelings are valid.
I think I really hope that is a takeaway for people, right? And like even in those moments, right? So we don't always have a choice. I did not have a choice to not be furious that night in that moment, you know, like it just, that's, you know, and I think I probably have more moments of choice just because I've been practicing this for so long, whatever. But I think, but you know, after Anaya died, we made grief friends, you know, we met other people who had lost kids. And they all said some version of this message. It's not that it gets better, because it doesn't, but it changes. And it's like, and I don't think they weren't coming at it from like a mindful perspective, but I got so mindful. And I think it's, I've come to see it in my own life is so true. And I've tried to share that message with other people I have since met who have had similar experiences, just like as a, something to hold on to in those moments where it is overwhelming and you don't have a choice to see it any differently, but to just know, like, it's not about it getting better. It's not about the grief getting smaller, but it changes. It will change. It will change, because that is the nature of everything. It will change. It won't be that lowest low point exactly as you're experiencing it forever. It just can't be. So that's something, yeah, something, a message I do want for anyone who's listened to this, who has also had trauma and grief, just it'll change.
Well, and the positive works the same way.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I think that's true too, is that even our most wonderful moments, you were talking about, you know, with your son, how cute he was. I can vouch for that. He's a very cute kid. Still is a very cute kid. But you know, I think we want experiences to go a certain way. We want the good things to last, and we want the bad things to pass as quickly as possible. And it all moves at its pace, right? But what they have in common is it moves. And so I think that's a big takeaway here, that does have infinite practicality. You know, whether you're grieving for a loved one or whether you're reacting to something that's happening on the field, right? I mean, the way you're going to feel 5 minutes from now is different from the way you're going to feel right now, the way you're going to feel 30 seconds from now, the way you're going to feel 30 years from now, right? It's going to change. And if you're able to kind of ride those waves, I mean, I use that language a lot with the clients I work with, is kind of thinking about things in terms of waves, almost like getting good at surfing, right? Like you're surfing the waves. There's going to be highs, there's going to be lows. There's going to be times where you fall off the board. There's going to be times where, you know, it gets overwhelming, it gets messy, but you just keep on. And I think of that guy in the tire place, right? Like, I'm tired of the journey. Well, that's,
yeah,
don't know what to say to that, right? It's like, it's okay, well, you could ostrich yourself here, you could stick your head in the ground, but life is still happening to you, buddy, right? It's that's the way it is. So just like we did at the end of the episode last season, I feel weird sort of going now into a self-promotion and advertising kind of mode to wrap up our episode. I will just say, you know, thank you to everyone who listened. Thank you, Tim, again, for your candor and your willingness to put your stuff, your life out there the way that you have. I think these have been incredibly powerful episodes that you've been willing to do and sharing your journey here. Thank you, Taylor, for everything. I'm just loving so much these roundtable discussions. And Taylor was kind enough to join us on his vacation, making time to have this conversation. So just want to express our appreciation for him. And to our colleague, Carol Glass, for all of her support of our podcast. Thank you so much, Carol. And, you know, if you do want to connect with us, there are lots of ways you can do that. There'll be stuff in the show notes about that, or you can listen to other episodes. We give lots of ways to connect with us and lots of resources that we provide through our podcasts and also through our institute. But thank you to everyone who listened. Thank you, Taylor and Tim, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you, guys. Thanks, everybody. Bye.